So this is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. I forget the verse. Magya 266. Didn't put it up there. I'll tell you later. But there it is. There are five kinds of liberation: Sarukya, Samipya, Sarupya, Sarshti, and Sayujya. Please repeat. There are five kinds of liberation.
There are five kinds of liberation.
Salokya, Samipya, Sarupya. Sarshti and Sayujya. Yes, so this is Matthew 6:266, and I was actually supposed to read the previous two verses, so I'll just quickly read that translation of those. The Bhattacharya continued, "The impersonalists who do not accept the transcendental form of the Lord, Sri Krishna, and the demons who are always engaged in blaspheming and fighting with him are punished by being merged into the Brahman effulgence. But that does not happen to the person engaged in the devotional service of the Lord." Then comes this verse. Purport. Salokya means that after material liberation, one is promoted to the planet where the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides. Samipya means remaining an associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarupya means attaining a four-handed form exactly like that of the Lord. Sarshti means attaining opulences like those of the Supreme Lord. And Sayujya means merging into the Brahman effulgence of the Lord. These are the five types of liberation. Omigana Timirandasya Janjana Shalakaya Chakshurim Militam Jena Tasmashi Gurve Namaha Namaram Vishnupraya Krishpastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinaminate Namaste Sarasuri Devi Gauravani Vachani Nevashesha Sunivari Pashtacha Desha Taranim. Hare Krishna. So I'm so happy to be back here again after such an extended absence. And I hope I can say something which is useful to you, because when I read this verse, I realized I knew absolutely nothing about these five types, well, at least four of them. We hear a lot about Sayujya all the time, how terrible it is and how we should avoid that. But very rarely do we hear anything about the other four. And so I thought, okay, well, let me try to research and find out more. And I didn't really find out that much. With the help of Govinda Prabhu here, I've got a few quotes which I'll share with you from various shastras. And let's see if we can make, go a bit deeper into this subject. So when I first read it, thought about it, some questions came up regarding these liberations. So what is the distinctions between them? If you attain Salokya, you've gone to the Vaikuntha planet. So why am I not associating with the Lord? Am I associating with the Lord, which is a different one of these liberations? Samipya is, to have the Lord's personal association. Or if I have Sarupya, which is a form exactly like the Lord, well then, wouldn't I have Sarshti, which means his opulences as well? But apparently not, because these are distinct and separate forms of liberation. So I thought, well, maybe you get all four if you go there, four for the price of one. If you manage to achieve liberation. So that was a question that I have a look at. If you only get one, what determines which one you get? As we'll hear shortly, you attain these liberations by rigid adherence to your sadhana and following the ritualistic principles, etc. So then you'll get one of them. Which one? Why would I get Salokya and not Sarupya, or like that? So if it is, do you only get one, or maybe you get all four? And if someone has a desire to attain any of these, which we're told not to do, but is it material to desire? Liberation to the Vaikuntha planet sounds pretty good. Isn't that what we're after? We want to get out of this material world, right? And attain Krishna's association. But actually, devotees reject them, we're told. So the question is, why? Why would they reject something like that, to go and associate with Lord Narayana in the spiritual world? Wouldn't that be nice? So let's move on. So here's a quote from the Bhagavatam, 7th canto. Different persons achieve different types of mukti. Sayujya, Salokya, Sarupya, Samyapya, and Sarashti, according to their own intense desire, which is called bhava. So what I understood from this is that you don't attain all four, necessarily. You attain one of them. And that depends on your desire. Intense desire is called bhava, your bhava. And, you know, smaran bhava. So when whatever you think of at the time of death, your bhava, will determine your next body. So if you're absorbed in thoughts of the Lord, that's where you'll go. But if you're absorbed in thoughts of Him in a particular way, that's what you'll achieve. So somehow or another, some kind of bhava will get you salokya, that will, you know, you're intensely desiring to go to the planet where the Lord resides. Or you want to have a form like His. Oh, I'd like to have a forearm form exactly like Narayan. I mean, I'm just, you know, I don't really understand it, as I said from the very beginning. But it appears that this is what this verse is saying, something along those lines, that depending on your desire, you will attain one of these liberations. Which brings me back to one of the other questions I raised earlier, which is it not kind of material? I mean, if I desire anything, it's considered material. We just want what Krishna wants, right? You know, if Krishna wants us to go to hell, we'll go there. If we're sufficiently advanced enough. Or if He wants us to go to heaven, or if He wants us to go to Vaikuntha. Whatever He wants, that's supposed to be our mood, isn't it? So how could you have a bhava that, you know, you want to achieve one of these liberations? Who has that? You know, it doesn't seem to be the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Maybe it's the Sri Vaishnavas. I don't know. I don't want to speak for them. I think they believe that Narayan is the ultimate goal. But I don't know exactly, you know, what their practice is or anything. So these are questions which are open. We can discuss them in a moment. Perhaps some of you here might have some insights, might have seen some shastras that I haven't actually yet seen that give us more information. So here's another quote from the 7th canto. Vaishnavas attain the liberations of Sarupya, Salokya, Sarshti, and Samipya, whereas the Mayavadis are supposed to attain the liberation known as Sayujya. Sayujya Mukti, however, is not very secure, whereas Sarupya, Salokya, Sarshti, and Samipya Muktis are most certain. So this raises a few questions. So Prabhupada says they are supposed to attain the Mayavadis, the liberation. So that suggests to me that they don't actually attain it. Or maybe they would like to attain it, or they try to, that's their goal. It seems that it's not that they do attain, you know, that Prabhupada could say they attain this. So maybe they do, maybe they don't, and we'll look at some quotes on that in a second. But he also says that it's not very secure. So why would you think it's not very secure? I'll have to throw it out, get you guys thinking a little bit. I beg your pardon? Because they will come back. Why will they come back? It's not permanent. Brahman.
Like when you are in a Brahma yogi with the Lord,
right.
It's not permanent duration. After some time, you will come back.
After some time, you come back. It's not a permanent situation, Brahman. There's one place where Srila Prabhupada says that Brahman is a fallen condition, right? So that's why it's not secure. Let's have a look. This is from the purport of that verse. Although the servants of Lord Vishnu, Narayan, in the Vaikuntha planets are equally situated with the Lord, the devotees there know very well that the Lord is the master, whereas they are the servants. So this mentality of knowing that I am the servant of God, which is, he's in this purport saying that this is the secure position, Whereas those who attain Brahman aren't necessarily thinking along those lines. As we saw in the previous verse, actually, to these, this 266 in the sixth chapter, which is the liberation of Sarvabhauma. And this is Sarvabhauma actually speaking after he was converted. He was previously an aspirant of Brahman, of, you know, he wanted to attain impersonal liberation. And then after he had his epiphany and he was transformed, he hated the very thought of it, liberation. And he's, now he's very knowledgeable. He knows all the scriptures and he's speaking about the different kinds of liberation and how horrible Sayuja was. And we heard him say earlier that this is a punishment, that to be put into the Brahman. That's where the demons go. And the demons hate Krishna. And we'll see in a moment that Prabhupada also says the impersonalists are exactly the same as the demons. They hate Krishna. So they attain the same place as the demons. Here's the famous verse where this is discussed. The impersonalists who take much trouble in penance and austerity for self-liberation may approach the impersonal Brahmajyoti, but ultimately, because of not being situated in devotional service, they glide down again to the material world to undergo another term of material existence. I love that term, glide down. You see, imagine them coming out of the Brahmajyoti, you know, gliding back again to the material world. Prabhupada. This is confirmed as follows. Yei nye revindaksha vimuktamani nas tvayastabhavana vishuddha buddhaya aruya krishchena param padam tata pajantyadu nadrita yushmat angraya. So this is the key verse that Prabhupada always quotes when he's talking about the impersonalists. And as Mataji was just saying, they're considered avishuddha buddhaya, not very intelligent. And because they haven't attained shelter at the param padam, the lotus feet of the Lord, they drop back down again after some time. The Brahman position is not very secure because ultimately it's not satisfying to us, because we are in fact designed to serve God. We are his parts and parcels. We're meant to serve him. So if we're doing anything other than that, we're not fulfilling our purpose, and we can't be satisfied. You know, as long as where we're suspended in the Brahman, enjoying the freedom of not being under the modes of nature, of no longer having to suffer birth and death and so many things. So for some time, that's very enjoyable. Prabhupada compares it to like taking off a very tight shoe you've been wearing for a very long time. And you take it off and you're like, oh, that's so wonderful. That's bliss. But after some time, that wears off, you know. Or it's like a very poor man who all his life has struggled, and suddenly he wins the lottery, I'm a millionaire. Oh, this is incredible! And he looks at the bank statement. Yes, it's true. I'm a millionaire. But how long is that going to satisfy you? You know, just knowing you've got the money, sooner or later you've got to spend it. So, being in the Brahman is something like that. You are enjoying, but it has its limits, and eventually you fall down again. So this is where the demons go, and this is where the impersonalists go. Prabhupada says they cannot tolerate the supremacy of the Lord. They want to be equal to him. So that he equates them to the demons. So that's Sayuja. And yeah, fair enough, we won't aspire for that one. That's plainly not very good. But what about the other four? So here, my devotees, who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service, are not interested even in the four principles of liberation, Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya, and Sarshti, although these are automatically achieved by their service. So I thought, well, what does that mean, automatically achieved? Does it mean that by rendering service to Krishna, I will achieve these Salokya, Sarupya, Samipyas, and Sharshtis? That's what it sounds like, doesn't it? But I don't think it means that. Because in the purport, Prabhupada discusses this point. So this is a quote from Bill Montag. Another one that Srila Prabhupada very much liked to cite is Mukti Sayam Mukuli Tanjali Sevate Sma Dharmata Kama Kataya Samaya Pratiksha. Bilba Mangal Thakur realized that if one develops his natural devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukti stands before him with folded hands to offer all kinds of service. In other words, the devotee is already liberated. There is no need for him to aspire for different types of liberation. Pure devotee automatically achieves liberation even without desiring it. So what I understand this to be saying, Srila Prabhupada is quoting this verse, what Bilba Mangal is saying, is that Mukti stands, Mukulitanjali, it's like the folded palms, is standing before you with folded palms. What does that mean exactly? You know, are you sort of able to see the goddess of Mukti or something? I don't think it means that. I think what he's saying is that you're already liberated. In fact, there's a verse to that effect. Who knows that verse? I'm sure Govinda knows that verse from the... Is it from the Ihayasya? Yeah. Yeah. Jivan Mukta Sa Uchite Jai. Shishi Gopala Radha Gopala Nanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. Yeah. Let's have a look at it. I think I've got it up. Right? Yeah, here it is. Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu describes this as follows. Ihayasi, etc. Person acting in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, in the service of Krishna, with his body, mind, intelligence, and words, is a liberated person, even within the material world, although he may be engaged in many so-called material activities. So, as far as liberation goes, this is... automatically attained if you are engaged in Krishna consciousness. So this is another discussion that this would bring up. Exactly what does it mean to be kamana manasa gira, hare dasye kamana manasa gira, with the activities, mind and words always engaged in the service of the Lord? Am I in that category? You know, it's like sometimes I talk nonsense and sometimes I think of things other than Krishna. I'll make a confession in front of all the Vaishnavas. I think of Maya. So I don't think that includes me. So I think, you know, when you attain a certain level of Krishna consciousness, and that's a discussion that could be had, whether it means nishtha or... Ashakti means Brahma Bhuta, right? Liberation. And attraction to Krishna. I think at that point you have to have some attraction for Krishna, but we're not going to get into this discussion right now in order to be fully engaged the whole time. If we don't have some initial attraction, Ashakti for Krishna, then we're going to still be attracted to Maya. So from time to time, Maya's going to drag us away from the path. And we're going to have to drag ourselves back again. So we're not quite liberated. But when we reach that point, that's the point of liberation. Okay, so let's talk a bit more about the other four. Although Sarlokya, Sarshti, Samipya, and Sarupya are devoid of the desire for enjoyment, still they are undesirable. As soon as a living entity becomes free from material bondage by the strength of devotion, he immediately attains liberation. That liberation, however, is not the principal fruit of bhakti. The pure love for Krishna attained by liberated souls is the principal fruit of sadhana bhakti. So this is one of the quotes that Sriman Govinda Prabhu sent me. This is from the Bhakti Aloka by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So it brought up a question for us, which is, why are they undesirable? What is undesirable about going to the Vaikuntha planets and being liberated with Krishna, or with Lord Narayan in this case? Why do you think, what would be your opinion, any of you, why this is not something to be desired? Because it says they are devoid of desire for enjoyment, so it's not material. That's what I understand that to mean. So if it's not material, it must be spiritual. And if it's spiritual, well, there's nothing wrong with it, right? Do you need it?
Sorry.
Oh, he's got it, yeah. Oh, yeah, the people on the Zoom. Yeah, give it to Mataji.
I'm just thinking that maybe they don't desire liberation because they already liberated. It's like Vaikuntha's state of consciousness. It's like Srila Prabhupada was already liberated by being here. So he doesn't really care about this type of liberation because he's already with Krishna all the time here.
So you're saying that they're already experiencing a state of liberation, so they're not desiring it. Yeah, that's a good one. Do you want to pass to them and then to that message? To Prayoja.
The interesting thing about liberation is that you can say it's if you have an aspiration that way for any of these forms, it's sort of like it's sprung upon you, it seems, you know, because it's not an aspiration, as I come to understand it. But if there is such a thing, a desire, then this aspiration for liberation is somebody who, let me get out of here from this material existence. What is it? It's eternity and knowledge. And but the blissful, you know, which is the Gaudiya part, the service aspect, may not be there. It's you see that you're a servant of Krishna, but you're not necessarily having a relationship with him. You know, you're there in company of, you know, just to it be in the company of. And it's always association. It's nice to be with those people that you feel akin to. So if you're all together there, there's that bliss of togetherness, but not necessarily a service bliss.
Mm.
That you experience when you the soul gives,
right?
You know,
yeah.
It's more of you could say almost like friendship with each other. You know, though you're there for Krishna, whoever is the supreme in that state, it's almost like you could say. Yeah, you just got this togetherness feeling and bliss of being together.
And nice, yeah. Thank
that's,
you.
That's where I see it. It seems to be separate from this,
right.
Serving each other.
Okay, thanks, yeah. You want to pass it to that lady? Want to just quickly reflect back what he said there, that Prajna Prabhu's saying there may not be the, you know, there's knowledge and eternity, but not necessarily bliss, which comes from service to the Lord. And that mood of service may not be there when you're in Vaikuntha with Narayan. Yeah, you may just, you know, be enjoying the company, being in the association of other like-minded people, like other devotees in that atmosphere, and admiring the Lord. Actually, the primary mood in Vaikuntha is Shantaras, and it sometimes develops a little bit. It can go as far as Gaurava Sakya, which is friendship with or in reverence. Did you want to say something?
Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhuji. In the Nectar of Devotion, we were learning that Krishna very easily grants liberation, but he does not grant devotional service. So the mood is that to capture the heart of Krishna, and you cannot capture the heart of Krishna just by liberation. Because as Prajna Prabhu was saying, there's like, what are you going to do in Vaikuntha and Golokdham? if you don't have that mood to serve, because if you love somebody, you want to serve them.
Mm.
So in order to capture the heart of Krishna, you have to love your service. You have to have that mood of loving
service. That's nice. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, he's saying that Krishna easily gives liberation, but his own devotional service is not so easily given, because that captures him, captures his heart. So that is really what we want. So let me move on, and we have when one associates with a pure devotee, he becomes so elevated that he does not aspire even for sarshti, sarupya, samipya, or salokya, because he feels that such liberation is a kind of sense gratification. Pure devotees do not ask anything from the Lord for their personal benefit. Even if offered personal benefits, pure devotees do not accept them, because their only desire is to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by transcendental loving service, which is what we were just hearing. So, this is Prabhupada, and he's saying he feels that such liberation is a kind of sense gratification. So, although it isn't, he feels like it is, because he's desiring something, you know, for his own enjoyment, ultimately. So all they want to do is satisfy Krishna by transcendental loving service. So this is a very elevated mood, you know, that we're aspiring to attain, that we have no separate desire other than what Krishna wants. And this is a pure devotee. So it's likely that, I know myself, I'm still contaminated by karma and jnana and problems, that, you know, I'm aspiring, I'd like to be free of misery. I'm not very fond of suffering, so I think it'd be nice to get free of it. But that's a material desire. Liberationism is actually a material desire. And even these four, which are not material desires, it seems, are felt like that in the mind of the pure devotee, because of his mood of wanting to please Krishna. So how do we attain these liberations? By karma mishra bhakti, one is elevated to the celestial kingdom. By jnana mishra bhakti, one is able to merge in the Brahman effulgence. And by yoga mishra bhakti, one is able to realize the omnipotency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But pure bhakti does not depend on karma, jnana, or yoga, for it simply consists of loving affairs. The liberation of the bhakta, therefore, which is called not just mukti, but vimukti, surpasses the five other kinds of liberation: sayujya, sarupya, salokya, sarshti, and samipya. So yeah, if we still have kama mishra bhakti, means we have some material desires. Generally speaking, demigods are held up to be examples of that. And they are, of course, in Swargaloka. And if we practice bhakti with that desire, with some material desire to achieve something, we want name or fame, adoration, followers, wealth, or whatever, then we'll go to Swarga. And if we're desiring liberation, like we realize, well, everything in the material world is ultimately pain. Like the Buddhists say, existence is suffering. So they want to get out. So that would be your mood if you finally concluded, wherever you look, there's nothing but misery. This world is full of suffering. Let me get out of here. That's jnana mishra bhakti. That will take you to the Brahman effulgence. Yoga mishra bhakti, practice of yoga, sankhya, and ashtanga. You'll come to realize the omnipotency, you'll realize God within the heart. I've got a quote about this a bit further on, actually, about the Ashtanga yogis, that they actually, they also ultimately become impersonalists. So that's also not so great. But the bhakta achieves vimukti, complete liberation, which is superior, surpasses the other five kinds. So why does it surpass? What is it about it that surpasses the other kinds of liberation? what would you say? I mean, why is it better? Is it more blissful? Is that what we want? More bliss? We want all the bliss we can get, right? we shouldn't be desiring anything, right? Bliss or otherwise. We just want to please God, huh?
That's the bliss. It's in the last verse of Shikshastakam. Even if you handle me roughly by your embrace, or make me broken hearted by not being present before me,
right,
you're completely free to do anything and anything. For that is my happiness.
Mm.
You know, so actually, even if I'm unhappy, and that makes you happy, that's my happiness.
Right. Yeah.
It's totally self-sacrificing, like, you know, you could say the gopis of Radharani, you know, it's, that's it.
That's the topmost, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Do you want to pass it over to Govinda, because we're kind of short time, but yeah, you're saying that the last verse of the Shikshastaka explains, Lord Chaitanya is saying that even if you make me broken-hearted by not being present before me, even if you trail my head, it doesn't matter what you do, I'm always going to love you. You know, and it's completely selfless. You're in bliss at that point, yeah. It's amazing, I can't even imagine it. Do you want to say something?
Here's how I'm looking at it. It's kind of like a question. Is it possible to have a mood that is different from your form? For example, if you have a forearm form, can you like worship Krishna in pure love? Or is it the case that because you have a certain mood, you have to have a form that matches that mood? Because, see, we can answer this. This question is very difficult to answer. What is undesirable about that? Because I'm looking at it thinking, well, there's nothing undesirable because our mood of bhakti is what is actually the most important thing. But we know Krishna says, Aishvarya Shatila Premanahi Moraprita. I'm not satisfied if you worship me with opulence. So we know that our mood has to fully satisfy Krishna. There shouldn't be any attachment to opulence. So my question is, if you have Sharshtis and Sarupya, like in a Vaikuntha form, is that attachment to Aishvarya?
So you're saying, the first thing you were saying, must our form correspond to the mood,
yes,
that we want to serve the Lord?
Because if it did, then
is this a trans question?
no, exactly. Yeah. Spiritually speaking. Yeah, go ahead.
No, just trying to find answer to the question. It's clear from the scriptures that Lord Krishna likes the mood of the residents of Vrindavan.
Yeah.
But what's not clear is, can you have a forearm form? Can you have a form like Lord Narayan and
yeah,
still have the mood of someone from Vrindavan?
So can you, if you want to serve Krishna in the mood of the Vrijbasis, right?
Yeah.
Could you still have a forearm form or the Sarshti, those are other liberations, and still retain that mood, have that mood of service? What do you think?
I don't know, and I don't even know what Sarupya means. Does it just mean the forearm form?
This is what I was saying in the beginning. It's tough to work it out.
Can you have Sarupya in Vrindavan? Do the cowboys have? Is it Sarupya?
I mean, I understand that in Vrindavan you can assume any form you like. You know, that the your form is actually two-handed human, but if you want to serve him as a blade of grass, you can become a blade of grass. If you want to serve him as a cow, you can take that form. So you can, any form, you have the complete freedom to shapeshift. Yeah, so you could take a forearm form if you want, but why would you? I mean, it would be a bit rasa bus in Goloka, I expect. I don't know. I mean, when the gopis saw Lord Narayan, they weren't attracted to him. He had forearms. But that's a good question. I mean, there's so many questions this brought up for me which I can't really answer. And you know,
I think Smart Hari might have answered it, because in this world we see people, they have a particular mood, they will get surgery to get a form to match their mood.
That's true.
So it seems you can't split the two.
So you can have a mood which is different from the body, that your spiritual body that you're exhibiting. Yeah, okay. Prabhu? Give him the mic.
if we understand that this class discussing these things has been going on, has happened since the acharyas wrote these words, that it's part of a manual for understanding.
Mm.
So when it says it surpasses, that is for the benefit of the aspirant student who is trying to focus his spiritual path. So they're advocating, don't be attracted to liberation, don't be attracted to the different times, don't be attracted to the four and far. This particular school that we are in is a school of worshiping Krishna. Now, it may be I have a very sweet godbrother who has gone over to the Sri Sampradaya, and he acknowledges Prabhupada, but Prabhupada has taught him, and now he's attracted to Narayan.
That's right.
He's initiated by them, he's attracted, and so on and so on. He's a very nice devotee, he's my friend, he's very sympathetic, he understands Gaudiya philosophy, but he's not attracted to it.
Yes.
So I would suggest that from an aspirant, I feel the whole of spiritual life is based on intention.
Mm.
What is your intention? What is your aspiration?
Mm.
So then from that, being introduced, going through the stages, becoming pure, not having material desires and so on and so on, I feel that slowly one will become fixed and one will become determined in one's bhava, in one's taste, in one's rasa. So I don't see how one would end up in a forehand form if one had another intention, if one had another aspiration, if one had I don't see that would happen.
Yeah.
That one could then have to be...
Sure.
I feel that it's a very, very, very long path.
Mm.
I think much longer than we realize to attain those positions.
That level.
And I think once... I think one will have figured all those questions and doubts, and just like my godbrother at this stage, just as a conditioned living entity, he's attracted to Narayan.
Yeah.
So I don't see that one would attain Vaikuntha and say, hey, hold on, what am I doing here?
It's been a terrible mistake. Yeah,
that's my view.
Yeah, you're saying that, that this is an ancient kind of... The acharyas have really thought this through, and there's been a lot of kind of discussion on this. And really, you're saying, we're just at the early stages, and we're trying to understand it from a position, a perspective of a conditioned soul who's really just embarking on the path of bhakti. We've got a long way to go. But as you go forward, gradually, things become clearer as you make progress, as you do your sadhana. And you will be attracted to a certain way of worshipping the Lord, a certain mood. And even you're saying like that, our mutual friend, I know who you mean, is, attracted to Narayan. Even though he was initiated by Prabhupada, he knows all the Gaudiya philosophy, he knows everything about Lord Chaitanya, but still he's more attracted to Narayan, and, even before he's liberated. So, and what to speak of when you actually do become liberated, then... things will be very clear that this is your mood, this is how you want to serve the Lord, and your eternal rasa will be manifest.
I think.
Yeah, sounds good. Prabhu?
Just to kind of corroborate that point, in the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada mentioned the purport that it's best to focus on Prabhupada mentions, I'll find the verse, but he mentions that there are many forms of the Lord, and he mentions that Ram avatar, Narasimha Dev, and so on and so forth, but it's best to focus on Krishna as the blue-eyed, blue boy, with the flute and everything. But then it's also mentioned that if you focus as the focal point is Krishna, because he's like the source of all the incarnations, if you do have a certain... inclination toward a certain devotee, then through the process Krishna will guide you towards you know, the form that you have that relationship with. So similar to what Swami was saying about his friend, and also in the CC, we've got the example of Murari Gupta, who was told to chant the holy names of the Lord. But then through that, obviously he realized that actually, you know, he's a Ram Bhakta, because he's Lord Hanuman. And so, but still the focal point was, you know, Krishna, the holy names. And so so you focus initially, and then through that, Krishna will guide you towards which is your person that you should be having relationship in, which way.
Right. So,
As opposed to going to another form initially, right, of Krishna. In other words, like, go to the center, the focal point, which is Krishna, and then if you do have a relationship with another form of Krishna, you'll be guided accordingly, as opposed to initially going to another form based on your own mental concoction.
Okay. Yeah, so you're saying there's a purport, I think it's in the Gita, right? I forget where it is, where Prabhupada says that we should just concentrate on Krishna, the two-armed form, playing his flute and everything, and not Nisringadeva, etc., etc., so all the different other incarnations he names. So you're saying, well, that doesn't preclude the possibility.
We worship Nisringa in various temples.
We do anyway, yeah.
Why?
Because
he's got... Why?
To protect ISKCON, as Prabhupada said. Protect us and our bhakti. But the point I think he's making here is that you should nevertheless concentrate on Krishna and worship him. And as you get purified by worshipping Krishna, there may develop a mood of attraction to another form of the Lord. And then the Lord will guide you toward your Ishta Devata, so whoever it may be that you're attracted to. But initially, we chant Hare Krishna, we worship Krishna, and that may evolve and develop it, spontaneously.
Because even like what Guruji is saying, that yeah, it's true, we worship other forms of the Lord, but if you look at our worship, the Krishna is always the focal point. We worship Narasimha Devas, and to appreciate certain aspects of Krishna, we worship Lord Ram to appreciate certain aspects, but Krishna is always the main focus.
Yeah.
And so it's always like that should be that preliminary modus operandi.
Right. So you're saying even though we do have other forms of the Lord within our worship, like Lord Ram is here and Nisringadev's in some temples and, you know, like that, still the focus is Krishna, and we appreciate other aspects of Krishna through these other avatars.
And other people who are initially attracted to other forms of the Lord also join ISKCON to focus on Krishna, especially in India.
Yeah.
There's many people from different sampradayas, from different groups, who feel attracted to, they come to Vrindavan and say, oh, this is just amazing, this is what I want to do.
Yeah, I'll just say that for the benefit of the people who didn't have the mic. But some people are attracted to other forms of Krishna, and they come, initially they come to the temple, and then they become attracted to Krishna. Actually, that's a good point too, because you mentioned Murari Gupta, and you know he didn't change, and same at Anupam, right? There's another example of that. But there was another one, the Brahmin in South India who was chanting Ram 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 Ram, and then after he met Lord Chaitanya, he started chanting Hare Krishna. He lost interest in chanting the name of Ram, right? So maybe it can change sometimes. Did you want to say something, Mataji?
Yeah. Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Prabhu, I just had a question on one of the initial quotes that you shared. Maybe if you can just scroll back. It talked about being equally situated with the Lord. The word that was used there was equally situated.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking that... does it mean that in these forms of liberation we lose that master-servant relationship? Because wherever we are in the universe, that relationship is eternal. But, I mean, is it right to think that in these liberations? Because Prabhupada uses the word equally situated.
That's right.
So what does he mean by that here? And do we stand the risk of... because that's the whole beauty of bhakti, the whole...
I can't find it now.
This one.
So your question here is that it says equally situated with the Lord.
Yes. Does the devotees there know very well that the Lord...
Whereas devotees realize that the Lord is the master and we're the servants. So the question is that mood lost in Vaikuntha?
Yeah. That's the pinnacle of our relationship.
Because we're always eternally the Lord's servant. So, but is there some way in Vaikuntha that we may not be aware of that mood is? That's a very good question. And actually, I'm probably not going to get that far today. I've got some other quotes here where devotees will accept. It says sometimes they will accept the four kinds of liberation if there's a chance for serving Krishna. So that seems to indicate that there may not be a chance for serving, even with those liberations. So what you're saying is possibly correct. How would it be possible for those four kinds of liberation not to include service to the Lord? I mean, you achieve that position by service, but yet when you get there, you may not be able to serve Him in that position. So, I wanted to explore that. I mean, I don't fully understand it. We're running out of time, but you quoted that. About, I was going to read that quote from the, you can see it up there now, that the Lord's not attracted to Aishwarya Bhav, right, Krishna. There is two kinds of devotion to the Supreme Person is untrue unless he is assured of having service to the Lord. A pure devotee does not accept any kind of liberation, whether it be residence on the same planet, equal opulence, proximity, having the same form, or monistic union, even though the Lord may offer. So, unless he's assured of having service, he won't accept even samipya, which is direct association with the Lord. So, how could that be possible? And it seems that in Vaikuntha, really you're just overawed by the Lord's splendor, by his greatness, by, you know, which you can just go on forever admiring him. he's so glorious and wonderful that you can just remain in the spiritual world in the Vaikuntha planets, just, you know, soaking up the greatness of God in the mood of Aishwarya Bhava, but you're not actually doing active service. Because the real equality that devotee achieves, where he feels like the Lord is equal to me, or is less than me, you know, it's in Goloka, the only place, right, in Vraja, that the devotee has that mood of really being equal to God and wrestling with him, or, you know, climbing on his shoulders and, you know, that kind of thing. Do you want to pass the microphone to Prabhu here?
In another place, it says we have three... We have three steps of God realization. So we have Brahman, Brahma Paramatma, and Bhagavan.
Mm.
So how does it mean that we have to start with Brahman and then we go to Paramatma before we understand Bhagavan?
Okay, yeah, you're saying that Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are the three phases of understanding God, the three levels. So, do we have to go through those progressively, realizing Brahman, then Paramatma, then Bhagavan, in Krishna consciousness? Do we do that? Yeah? Yeah, we do. We realize all aspects of God. Initially, Brahman, it comes at the stage of liberation from, you know, Ashakti, I said, when we begin to become attracted to God. And we become aware of his all-pervasive presence throughout. We see God everywhere. We see Krishna everywhere, Krishna's hand in everything. And that's like Paramatma realization. And eventually, face to face, God reveals himself to us. That's, if we're very fortunate indeed, then that will come. Here I just thank you, Prabhu. Although the aforementioned five types of mukti are worthy of rejection by devotees, the four types of salokya, samipya, sarupya, and sarshti are not completely adverse to bhakti. According to the difference in a particular devotee's eligibility to receive them, these four types of mukti assume two forms Svasuka Aishvarya Pradhanakari, that which bestows transcendental happiness and opulence, and Prema Seva Pradhanakari, which bestows loving transcendental service. So it seems that. And I read this in Jiva Dharma as well, and I couldn't find it, but the Thakur's talking about the two kinds of devotees in Vaikuntha, and this is, I think, talking about the same thing, Rupa Goswami and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. There's the Swasuka Aishvarya Pradhanaka, which I think is the mood of Aishvarya Bhava, of really, you know, I mean, everyone's got that mood in Vaikuntha, but this is where you're simply absorbed in the opulence, enjoying the opulence, and that's there in the Jiva Dharma. It talks about the different kinds of devotees in Vaikuntha, and one class of them are enjoying the opulence only at Vaikuntha. It occurred to me that may be where we came from, because we were absorbed in that opulence, and we thought, oh, let me try some of that opulence, let me enjoy it. But anyway, that's a speculation. But the other thing is, prema, seva, pradhanakari is prema, so even in Vaikuntha, there is prema, but it's a different kind of prema. And the service, but the service is in the mood of Aishvarya, of always, you know, admiring the greatness of God. And I didn't read those quotes, but Krishna is less attracted by that. He's not attracted by this mood of Aishvarya. He's attracted by pure, spontaneous love, where you just take him as your most intimate friend, you know, or lover. Prabhupada gives a nice example of Lloyd George. You heard that example, right? Of the British Prime Minister, who was like, you know, big man, and one day he was in his office, and someone was outside, a big foreign leader was waiting to see him, and he, you know, he waited for a long time, and then he thought, what's going on in there? And he asked the secretary to have a look. The secretary opened the door, and he could see that the Lloyd George was on the floor on all fours with his grandchild on his back, and he was playing, you know, and he realized that was a more enjoyable mood of pleasure for, you know, the Prime Minister than dealing with the big guys, you know, the official business in his capacity as the Prime Minister, which certainly would give him some pleasure. You know, you're the big man, everyone's come to you, so, but not as much as playing with the little child. So, you know, that's more attractive. And we want to please Krishna as devotees. We want to please him in the best possible way, the way he most enjoys. So that's why we are aspiring for that mood, and we're not interested in the moods of Aishvarya. Prabhu?
Krishna, thank you. With the deities, aren't we told to have a mood of awe and reverence towards them, other than the others?
Yeah.
So how would...
How does that work? Srila Prabhupada did say that. He said that we should worship them as Lakshmi Narayan, right, in the mood of... to have the proper respect. You can't, I mean, as I understand it, you can't become intimate with someone until you fully understand who that person is. The greatness, you first have to appreciate that. It's like the Bhagavatam takes us step by step through those levels. Initially, you know, from the lotus feet of the Lord upwards, till you finally come to the smiling face. And you have to know, you know, how great he is, the Srishti Leela, his creation pastimes, you know, how he's controlling the universe, how he's equal to everyone, you know, how he protects everyone. So all these different themes are there in the Bhagavatam, and they, you know, they awaken in us a realization of God and who he is and how great he is. And then we can get to that point of intimacy. So I think with worship of the deity, Prabhupada starts us at that point so that we have the right mood. And in time, it will develop into something more intimate, more familiar. That's the best I can do, unless anyone has any other thoughts on that. Prabhu?
I personally think sometimes we get stuck in a false dichotomy. We think that if we're worshipping God in awe and reverence, somehow that we can't have Krishna at the same time. But when we consider the residents of Vrindavan, so in Vrindavan they all have a god that they worship. It's just not Krishna, right? So they love Krishna as the boy, but then like Nanda Maharaj has got his Nrsingadev or his Atokshita deity. So he's obviously doing some kind of worship to his deity, and there's some kind of awe and reverence there. And like, I think they pray to Krishna, they pray to God to save Krishna, right? So I don't think it's a false dichotomy to say we can't sort of have an awe and reverence at the same time as loving Krishna, because the two are seem to be coinciding in Vrindavan already.
That's a nice point. Yeah, you're saying that why must there be one or the other? That even the residents of Vrindavan are worshipping God. I mean, they don't see Krishna as God. They see him as their little boy or their lover or whatever, their friend. But still, they're not atheists. It's not like they think there is no God. So Nanda Maharaj has got his Vishnu deity that he worships, and you know, then Shingadev is worshipped. Different deities are there. So that mood of worship will be Aishwarya. And so they've got both. You can have both.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Thank you. So I had a question in regards to, like, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that you, when you're studying, through intelligence, you can worship Krishna and its service as well. But is there a difference? Like, if we see everything as service, is there a difference? Because sometimes what happens is, like, if you're studying, you know, your false ego is going up. And through that consciousness, then it becomes about liberation, you know, just going back to Godhead, because in order to develop a taste for, like, love for Krishna, you need to have humility. So that's one question. Would it still be seen as service to Krishna, or, like, you know, the studying of the literature? Like, for example, let's say there's a devotee and they're doing a very intense course, like Bhakti Vaibhav or something, and sometimes their focus is a lot on studying of the literatures, and they can't give time to other services, like, I don't know, cleaning a temple or, you know, quality chanting of their round. So will the studying of the, you know, of the books, the shastras, be seen as their attempts to, for liberation, like, they're just, you know, the goal is liberation, or does Krishna consider that their consciousness is also loving devotional service? They're investing their time in studying the shastras.
Okay. So you're saying, you spoke about studying, and in the Gita, Krishna says, those who study this book, you know, the Gita, worship me with their intelligence. So that seems to be okay, you know, if I'm studying the Gita. But sometimes we become, like, absorbed in study, like doing Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav, and, you know, they're quite intense. So we're fully absorbed. And could it be that there's a mood of, like, I'm studying this, why? Because I want knowledge. Because I want to get free of, you know, suffering, free of material existence. So that would be like a contamination. It may be that's there, you know, the false ego and stuff. So you're just asking about that. So are you saying, is that a problem, that studying, could it be a problem? In response, I would say that we should view it as Shravanam Kirtanam, you know, that when we're studying Shastra, we're not gyanis, we're not trying to accumulate knowledge. Real knowledge comes, the Dhammi Buddha Yogam Tam, Krishna gives us that knowledge from within, as a result of the hearing and chanting that we're doing. So it's Sankirtan, you know, when we're studying Shastra, we should be discussing it with others, reading and repeating what we've heard, and trying to assimilate that knowledge. It's Sankirtan, and it's worship of the Lord, of course. And we shouldn't have that mood of, like, I want to be a big learned person. Why would I want to be a big learned person? So I can show off, you know, so I can, you know, demonstrate my knowledge to others. Then, yeah, that's a problem, if that's what you're thinking. Or I want to have the certificate, you know, and that way I can advance my career path in ISKCON or something by getting this qualification. So if we have those motives, yeah, that's a problem. But if we're thinking, this is hearing and chanting about the Lord, it's part of the Angas of Bhakti, and, you know, it's the Yugadharma, Sankirtan Yagya, then, yeah, that's great, you know. And all knowledge will come by Krishna's grace.